All right, so I'm Daniel Hawes, and I'm interviewing my cousin Tom, who served in the Marines for 29 years. He served in the Iraq War, and he was a Marine and a captain. And now I'll let him introduce himself.
Hey, Dan. Tom Dietrich. Grew up in Wilmette, went to St. Joseph's grade school, Loyola Academy there in Wilmette, and college in St. Louis University. I joined the Marine Corps coming out of college in 1982, a little while ago. And I ended up retiring in 2010, 2011, right in that time frame, and ended up with 29 years, and actually retired as a colonel, a full-bird colonel in the Marine Corps. So, hi.
Yeah, that's awesome. So to start things off, I'd like to ask you a little bit about your background, you know, growing up, where you grew up, you know, what you did as a kid, what it was like growing up, because times have changed drastically. So, you know, a little bit about yourself.
My family was started on the south side of Chicago down by Comiskey Park. And then we ended up moving up to Wilmette when I was 6 years old, 1968. Again, went to St. Joe's. I think I started in second grade there. Wilmette was a cool place, you know, kind of a quiet town. Altar boy, St. Joe's, did all that. Had a sailboat on Lake Michigan, little Sunfish, used to do that, ride my bike everywhere. There was no cell phones, no none of that. You know, we used to sketch on the back of the cars in the wintertime to get home. We took the bus. I had five brothers and sisters, two sisters, three brothers, and the whole neighborhood, everybody went to St. Joe's. So very small, tight group. St. Joe's was our parish, and, between the church and school, we knew everybody. And then Loyola Academy for high school. My friends either went to New Cher West was actually open at the time, a few went there. And then Loyola, and that's when you meet everybody else from Faith Hope and OLPH and just all the schools, St. Francis as well. And then, that was a great place. Had a lot of fun. Not much has changed. Some has changed, but still has the cobblestone streets and, not much different than where you're at. So, it was good.
All right. Well, that's awesome. So you ended up going to college, and would you like to talk about that and maybe what led you, I guess, into becoming a Marine and, college?
Well, I think for everybody, the big choice in college is what are you going to do? You have to figure out kind of your career path. And my father was in the Air Force. He was actually a navigator in the Air Force and was based at O'Hare at the time, and we used to go out and watch him fly in. He flew in the KC-97s at the time, which were B-29s that were converted into aero refuelers and tankers. And so it was really cool to go out there and see the parades and the promotions and see him come and go in his uniform. So I was intrigued by that. And then when I was 13 years old, he took me flying with one of his buddies, and I always kind of liked aviation. So when I got near the end of Loyola Academy, I needed to decide what I was going to do. And, I said, well, I want to go fly. I want to fly. And so that pretty much set a path of what I was going to do in college. And I went to St. Louis University and was enrolled in their aviation program. And so my degree was in aviation management. And what that included was getting all my pilot ratings, my private, my instrument, my commercial, my multi-engine ratings. So a four-year college where you come out, you're pretty much a basic commercial pilot. And I didn't even think of the Marines one bit through that whole experience. And then I got to my last semester, and my mom is like, what are you going to do? Where's your resume? How are you paying off your loans? And my buddy had just joined the Marines, and I was introduced to the recruiter, and he asked me if I'd like to take the test. And I took the test and did very well, and they offered me a commission pending medical, physical, and completion of officer candidate school. So I was like, well, what do I do now? And I had a four-year deferment. I'm paying my loans back if I did it. So it made a lot of sense. That was 1982. The controllers, air traffic controllers, were on strike. I would have had to go on and put out more money to get additional pilot ratings to get a job, or I just joined the Marine Corps. And so that's what started it all right there. And again, 2 months before, I never even thought about it.
Yeah.
And 2 months after I signed the paperwork, I was in officer candidate school in Quantico, Virginia.
That's awesome. Wow. That's crazy. So after finding out, you know, that, or at least that last 2 months of college and then realizing, all right, I'm going to go to the Marines, was your family, like, supportive of your decision? Did they agree with it?
Well, they were shocked, but when they came down for my graduation, I introduced them to my recruiter and told them I joined the Marine Corps. And my dad, being in the Air Force, said, "You what? You joined the Marines?" And he did say one thing. He goes, "You won't regret it." And that was funny because I have no regrets. I think they were probably a little, I don't want to say scared. I think my father knew the career opportunities that were there. My mom was probably a little worried about everything. But for the most part, I think they were just glad that I had a career path and a direction in my life following college.
Yeah. All right. So now that we know you joined the Marines in 1982, that was right around the time when the Iraq War started and the War on Terror kind of started.
No, that was 2002.
Which war was in 82?
We were still in the Cold War.
All right, well, you joined then, and then, so during the Cold War, you were fighting, and then the transition over to the Iraq War. How was that different?
There was Ronald Reagan was the president, and Jimmy Carter was prior to. So the military had pretty much have been drawn down since the end of the Vietnam War. And so when President Reagan came in, he said, you know, we have taken this thing down to such bare bones, we need to build it back up. So being in the military in the 80s was actually a good time. We did a lot of training. There was a lot of opportunity, but things were good. We pretty much so got all the assets and training that we needed to become who we were. I got a pilot slot, and I ended up choosing C-130s from the Marine Corps, mostly because the Marines had a C-130 squadron at Glenview Naval Air Station. So I figured if I got C-130s, I could eventually get back to Glenview. So I made it through flight school, did very well, boot camp, then flight school, and I got my wings in 1984, and then I did 3 years at Cherry Point, North Carolina, Havelock, North Carolina, and pretty much so trained up and down the East Coast, occasional West Coast, being in the C-130s, it was a larger four-engine airplane, so I'm now flying to Germany and England and Portugal, and then California, Arizona, Hawaii, Alaska, a little bit of South America, a lot of Canada, and 3 years of doing that. And then in 1987, I transferred to Okinawa, Japan, and flew in Okinawa for a year and a half. And that flying was fun because now I'm in the Pacific, and Wake, Guam, Tinian, Saipan, Kwajalein, Australia, Singapore, Taiwan, Thailand, Korea, Kunsan, Pusan, Yechan, Jeju, every place in Korea, yeah. All over mainland Japan. It was a great experience and a lot of fun. I was 26, 27 years old doing that. Had a blast. And then did 2 years and a half in Japan, and in 1988, I got orders to Glenview Naval Air Station, and was based in Glenview, flying for the Marine Corps, 10 miles from where I grew up. It was a blast.
Now, did you want to go to the Glenview Air Station?
To be active duty in the military, flying planes around the world, living in my hometown for the most part.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's great. So now can we talk a little bit specifically about, like, flying? What specifically did you do, like, when you had your flights? Like, what was the mission, I guess?
Well, I flew an aerial refueler plane, a high-altitude aerial refueling with the jets, And I refueled F4s, F18s, A6s, F14s. And then we also did the helicopters at a low altitude, slower airspeed. So the CH-53s, CH-46s, HH-60s, working with the Army as well and the Air Force, but mostly supporting the Marines and the Navy too. We did airdrops. I did personnel and equipment. We would do high altitude and low altitude airdrops. And then we would do assault landings, land on unimproved strips, taxiways, highways, anywhere I could get 5,000 feet would land the airplane. And a lot of just hauling trash. There was hauling trash and passing gas. That's what we did. But it was good. So in 1990 was when Iraq invaded Kuwait in August of 1990 and began Desert Storm. So that was called Desert Shield. And then in January of 91 started Desert Storm. So I was flying back and forth to Kuwait and Bahrain at that time from Glenview, and pretty much so spent 6 months. That was kind of the beginning of the war on terror right there, when things started happening, and really that's when Saddam started waving his flag, saying, you know, I'm gonna invade my neighboring countries. So that went on through 91, and then after that we actually had an exercise called Northern Watch and Southern Watch, where we put up no-fly zones in the northern and southern part of Iraq. So now I'm flying over to Turkey and providing support for Northern Watch, and we were in Bahrain and providing support for Southern Watch, doing aero refueling and logistics support. So that took us through pretty much so all the way up until when Iraqi freedom started. We were in Bahrain, this is in 2003 now, as Southern Watch. We were brought in there for Southern Watch, and then the Iraqi freedom kicked off.
So going back to like 91, when the war on terror kind of started, was there like a big shift in like how you guys prepared, or like was there just a change in the whole like atmosphere, I guess, of the Marines and like flying, you know? Was everything way more serious, or did it all kind of just stay the same?
Totally more serious, because now they're shooting at you and you're doing this stuff. You know, we trained in a lot of safety things have to be included in the training. There's nothing worse than somebody getting hurt or having an accident while you're training. So during combat, some of those rules get changed a little bit. You take a little bit more risk, but you still can't afford a loss or an injury. So you really had to be careful. And as a Marine, there's an expectation of doing the job and going in hard. So we had a lot of people pointing fingers, you know, you Marines, man, you got to throttle it back a little bit. We know you're going to go dive in there and save the world. Don't be doing that. But that's pretty much what we did. We went hard every day when we were over there. I had some times where 40 hours without having sleep or anything. And even during Iraqi freedom, we were flying every night, 5-6 nights in a row. I get to bed at 10 in the morning and get up at 5 in the afternoon and back in the plane at 7 o'clock and fly all night long and doing stuff. Anyway, so a lot more aggressive. You just hope that you trained right for the situation. Yeah. And the people who didn't, we had to make sure that they weren't easily overwhelmed by what we asked them to do.
Okay. I mean, now if you don't mind me asking, do you have like a specific story or something that like you remember very, very vividly of like when everything kind of changed over to, you know, the war on terror?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you that Desert Storm was definitely an awakening about what we had to do, because we had to move a lot of assets halfway around the world and be ready to go as soon as we landed the airplanes. I remember I was in Bahrain, I think, and I was flying, and we ran out of water, and it was hot, and I was like, holy cow, all of a sudden you realize how precious something like water, air conditioning and all of that. But you definitely get taken out of your normalcy. Things don't become that easy all the time. So you have to start planning more, plan ahead. When 9/11 hit, I was actually in New York at that time and spent a week up in New York. There was no doubt that the world had changed right there. I was watching it on the news when the planes hit and looking out the window and seeing the smoke. So the shock value right there, and knowing that it was gonna, things were going to get very difficult. So sure enough, I end up in Bahrain is where we positioned initially to fly into Iraq. And the first flights when we did that, the Scud missiles were flying over. I was actually living in the desert in Kuwait. The Scuds were flying over, we were flying in, they were shooting at us, we were getting mortar attacked. I was living in a tent and eating MREs, so hitting a bunker 10 and 11 times a day type deal. So yeah, there was no doubt that things were serious, but the 9/11, you know, that's when we all realized, you know, when I first heard Al-Qaeda. President Bush mentions Al-Qaeda. Nobody even knew what that was. We were obviously, I think we're a little underprepared that somebody could be so aggressive against our country and us not even know about it or expect it. So a little shock value for us, but definitely we all came together and realized that, you know, we needed our A game on right then and there.
Yeah, so that was kind of the wake-up call. I didn't even realize that you were in New York when 9/11 happened.
Yeah, I was on a trip, and they pretty much just shut down all the airports, and so we got stuck there, and we were all there.
Wow.
And even a more personal story, I flew Marine 130s, and the co-pilot on the second airplane, which was United 75, was actually a Marine 130 pilot who had just gotten out and got hired by United Airlines, David Horak, and he was the co-pilot on that plane that crashed into the building.
Really?
The second building, yeah. So we all knew him, and, you know, and just the stories. It just, the more people you meet, especially in New York, the more you realize how close to home it all is. So over 3,000 people killed.
Yeah, man. Wow. All right, well, we'll keep going on. And so after 9/11 happened, like, what were some of the missions that you ran after 9/11 happened?
Mostly, initially, we went into a heavy training mode. So 9/11, all of 2002, our squadron, we did two deployments to Afghanistan, and I didn't go on those deployments initially. I was the commanding officer of the unit, and so I sent out two four-plane detachments to Afghanistan, and they flew there pretty much so for the next 10 months, did a great job, Operation Anaconda, some of the other things. And then everybody came back in November of 2002, and then in January of 2003, we took the whole squadron and moved into the Middle East and started out in Bahrain. That was in February of 2003. We got the orders in January. We're all there in February. And pretty much so spent the next 8 to 10 months flying in and out of Iraq.
So when you would go to the Middle East and stuff, were you like, you know, did you ever get like breaks off? Like, were you serving like, what's the word for it? I forgot what the word was, but like, could you come home? Like, did you ever get to go home and like stay with your family, or was it just always flying back and forth and that was just kind of you did?
No, once we went over there, we stayed there.
You did? So how long did you stay there for, like?
Initially, 8 months.
8 months, okay.
Living in a tent.
Wow. So when you did come back, how was the change? You know, you were living in a tent. How did that like impact you coming back to the U.S.?
Well, life can become very simple. You know, there's the few things that are important to you: a good hot meal, maybe a hot shower, maybe some nice facilities, and the air conditioning in your tent. So, we had you know, I lived in my uniform the whole time. So, laundry was pretty simple. Everything's green, and then as an example, when I came back, and this happened to be the second time, I ended up going over two times. Pretty much all I got. I did the first 8 months. I came home for 6 months, and then I went back for another 8 months and lived in Fallujah in that area once we had taken Iraq. But when I came back the second time, I ended up in California. I went to use my credit card, and it was expired. Oh. I hadn't used it in 8 months. And then I went to use my ATM card, and that was expired. Wow. I had no idea. So, I mean, your life can become very simple. You know, yeah. I hadn't put gas in a car, or I spent $300 in 8 months. And that was just because we could get into Kuwait and buy pizza and bring it back. So, you know, there was times like that. But, you know, our job was to serve and provide logistic support was our mission for the most part. So, yeah, life can become very simple. Fortunately, I was the commanding officer of the unit, and I had 14 airplanes and 400 Marines that were working for me, so I didn't get much sleep between the flying and making sure everybody was accounted for every day.
Yeah, so could you, like, talk and maybe describe, like, how you worked your way up in the Marines, you know, starting from, like, the bottom or...
Yeah. Sure. Everybody starts out. I was an officer, went in as an officer, so I started out as a second lieutenant. I think it's 2.5 years in, you get promoted to first lieutenant. You're a captain by 5 years in. I made major at year 10, lieutenant colonel at year 17, and I think I was in year 23 when I made full bird colonel. So it's, you know, if you stick around long enough, anything can happen. There's definitely opportunities to fail. Sometimes other people just chose not to participate anymore, and when their contract was up, they got out. I chose to, they kept asking me to stick around and do more, and I did all that. I went to the schools required for promotion, and I enjoyed the people I was working with, and next thing you know, I get a call from the general, and he says, "You're the next commanding officer of the unit. Congratulations." And then 9/11 hit. So
as you, like, worked your way up and, like, your responsibility, I guess, started growing and getting bigger, did that, like, change your mindset on how, like, did that change your mindset on the war, I guess, you know, having all this responsibility now?
Well, all the guys I had known before that, up to that point, I knew a few guys from Vietnam, but everybody who I went in with, none of us had been in that situation. So all the fun and games kind of ended, and I was the first CO that I knew during a full combat operation. I wasn't even in the squadron when this was happening. All of a sudden, I'm the CO, commanding officer, and we are full operational tempo, surge ops, you know, go until we tell you to stop type thing. So a lot of things, thank God we trained heavily for it, and a lot of opportunity to fail. And in my situation, no one got hurt. We brought everybody home. All the planes were fine, and we did the job that they asked us to do. So, but I also think the training we had, when they said ready, go, we went in very hard and said, we're gonna do the best we can. And we did.
So it seemed like your training helped out a lot. Is that correct? Like, did you follow, and, like, you know, when you were, like, struggling, I guess, or, like, during, like, something, if something went wrong, did your training, like, kick in like that, you know?
Well, it was kind of like, you know, that Southwest airplane that had the engine fail and blow out the window, and unfortunately the lady died because of that. Yeah. They said the pilot did a great job, cool, calm, and collect. Well, she did her job that she was trained to do. So even though our biggest mission was night vision goggle low-level inserts, I'd fly to an hour and a half between 100 and 500 feet at nighttime on goggles and land on a highway strip in between two bridges and offload the ammo and fuel for the tanks that were sitting there to move up to their next objective. I'd turn around, take off, go back and get some more, come back and do it again. People were shooting at us, would be on the ground, mortars were going off. There was, it was a lot of opportunity to fail. But everybody did their job and did a good job. So as an example, we normally fly 6,000 hours a year. We flew 3,000 hours the first 30 days of Iraqi freedom. So what we did in six months, we did in 30 days as far as the amount of flying we were doing. A lot of exposure. But everybody, like you said, they all came together. Everyone did their job. There was no complaints. Sleep was a priority. Get food. Get ready to go out and do it again.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good. So why don't we lighten the mood up a little bit? Do you have any like funny stories? I guess. I mean, you know, is there anything that you guys did that you know, like, what'd you guys do for fun? I guess. I mean, when you weren't.
Well, it's kind of funny because our tent city, we had our different guys. We had our pilot group. We had our maintenance guys. We had our air crew, our engineers, our navigators, our loadmasters. It was funny how all the tents started merging together and canopied up. And I would walk in, and there's a card game going over in the flight engineer tents. The navigators, they're all hooked up playing a computer network game. These guys are watching a movie over there, and it was just funny how everybody just kind of merged, and depending on what you wanted to do each night, you know, do I want to play a computer game, play a poker game, watch a movie, what am I going to do? Guys playing basketball. So we all had our own little things. People found ways to stay entertained. That was fun. There was no alcohol allowed, I'll tell you that, just because of the situation. We all carried weapons the entire time. I say that, but I knew those guys were drinking. As long as everyone was safe. So that was interesting to see how that happened. Communications were very limited. We weren't allowed to call home and tell anybody what we were doing. We could write letters a little bit. But for the most part, our fun was, and we hit the gym a lot. We did that too. So that was good. We initially had an issue with numbers. When I had to put air crews together, I would do it, start a label on air crew number 1, 2, 3, and 4. We had 28 air crews, 7 members per air crew, just so that on the flight schedule, instead of having 7 names for security reasons, I just say crew number 1, crew number 2. We had issues with that. Guys didn't like being called crew number 4 when they thought they should have been crew number 2 or 3. The number 8 guys thought they should have at least been a number 5 guy. So the numbers had nothing to do with it. It was just the random way we put people together. And one of my smart guys decided to solve the problem. We're going to let each crew choose a superhero name. So the flight schedule would say Batman crew, Spider-Man crew, Green Hornet crew. We had the SpongeBob crew. We had... everybody came up with every crazy name they could, so the flight schedule would actually say SpongeBob, Green Hornet, Batman, Superman, showtime 4 in the morning, take off at 6 in the morning, return at 1600 in the afternoon. So I thought that was kind of funny that nobody complained about numbers anymore.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what are you doing now, you know, after serving? Like, you know, what did you do now?
Well, I will back up. I went to college to be a pilot, and I used the Marine Corps to gain aviation experience, pay off my loans and all of that. But basically, my ultimate goal was to become an airline pilot. And I knew I needed experience either through civilian or the military, and I chose the military. So when I got out, I got hired by Federal Express. And so I'm now a pilot for FedEx. And my job, I'm still hauling trash in boxes, but I do that all around the world every month. And it's a great job. And really, had I not been in the Marine Corps and had that opportunity, I don't know if I'd be able to call myself a FedEx pilot right now. So very happy to be in this place. I retired from the Marines, and I'm eventually going to retire from FedEx, and I'll end up with 2 pensions with that, and mandatory retirement is 65. It's a little way down the line for me because I'm pretty young still, but it's all going to work out great. I don't know if I could have planned it any better.
That's great. I mean, yeah, it's awesome how you never know. You just never know.
Right. You're a junior in high school. You got a long road ahead of you.
Oh, yeah.
I tell people, decide what you want to do, who you want to be, figure out where you want to be 10 years from now, and draw a line back and figure out how to get there. Because it's, you got a lot of decisions to make here in your future. But for me, the military was a way to get to my goals. And fortunately, it worked out. I tell people, if you're going to join the military, know what you want to get out of it. Know what your expectations are. There's people, some young Marines that I've met that weren't happy, and I asked them why, and they said, it's not what I wanted. And I asked them, well, what did you want? And they go, well, I don't know. So they obviously didn't have a plan. They didn't end up where they thought they would. And so you can change your direction once you get in. That's a little more difficult with your initial obligations. But for me, it all worked out. And to say, I have no regrets. And the best friends in my life are those guys I flew with and lived in the tents with and played poker and watched movies when things seemed pretty drastic and desperate. And, we were all together on 9/11. I got my grade school friends, high school friends, college friends, but my best friends are my military friends, just because we've all been through so many life events together.
That's great to hear. So just one more question and then I'll let you go. But, so what did you take away anything from serving, or is there anything that you learned that you value a lot in life now after serving, in the Marines?
Well, I'm certainly more positive about the way I carry myself. I still work out all the time. I finally let my hair grow a little bit, but now it's going away. So yes, I'm pretty much a take charge type person. My neighbors on the block here, my friends at work, they're like, oh, you're the colonel. No wonder. That's the colonel. That's why he's doing that. There's no reason to be hesitant in a lot of things, and in life and all that. So I went from what I would call just another kid in high school and college to, all my friends back then. Now they're looking at me and going, holy cow, look at you now. A lot of leadership, a lot of mental strength, and just life experiences again that, I tell people, go hard and have no regrets. It's, you just have to have a good attitude about it and be strong and, watch your back, watch your buddy, and just stay strong is what I'd say. So probably the best thing I could have done with my life is what I did was joining the Marines.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, that about sums it all up, I guess. So thank you very much for letting me interview you.
Well, Dan, it was good to see you again. And I've got the number to the recruiter there in the North Shore when you're ready. And I just say, pilot school, man, go to pilot school and then take it from there. And I'll draw the path for you. Let you know how to get there.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Good luck in school. And we'll see you next time we're up north there.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
Dan.
Bye now.